Webby, how are you, mate? Good
morning, boys. Great to be joining you here on a beautiful Friday morning. I know that the pubs are sort of opening today, but, you know, it'll be better when the whole bar's open. But if it's just got to be the restaurant, then so be it.
So be it. Have you got a booking?
Actually, don't. Maybe I should. I'm going to wander down to the King's Cross Hotel later, see if I can get a booking for one.
That'll do something. Now, you've been writing about this mad rush on things that are normally pondered over for months, Webby, being done pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind couple of days, as always, in rugby league, with the one ref edict coming down on Wednesday night from the ARL Commission. There seems to be plenty of angst. This COVID crisis is throwing up plenty of curveballs and plenty of things we never thought we'd see. And the one today is Ricky Stewart and Wayne Bennett are actually agreeing on something, and that's that they both believe that they should be bringing in the one referee and the tackle restart for ruck infringements. I actually like it as well. My only issue is that it's been done so hastily. And my only issue is that, you know, Loz, you just talked about it earlier, about how well rugby league has done in getting us back before every other major sport in this country behind racing, which never stopped, of course. But I'm just worried that the first month or two of football is going to be trashed by refereeing debates. I don't know if talking endlessly about the refs is a good thing for the start of the comp. But, you know, it's certainly set up plenty of debate, hasn't it, the last couple of days?
It certainly has. I'm just intrigued how it's going to work, this six to go, and the discretion that the referees will have. I want to find out a little bit more detail, how they're going to award penalties and what constitutes a penalty rather than six to go, and the pressure that will be placed upon referees with the introduction of this rule and how it may change how games are played. So I'm fascinated to see how it's going to work. I hope it works, but somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, no, I don't know whether this will be a good thing.
Yeah, that sort of echoes what a lot of other coaches are saying, Laurie. You know, I was talking to one last night, and you're right. There's a lot of angst about the discretion of the referee's now going to have around when he or she decides to blow the penalty. If it's 10-all with 2 minutes to go and a defending team is just committing a couple of ruck infringements, strategically placed ruck infringements to slow it down at whatever time to halt the attacking team's play, and they're screaming for a penalty, but they can't get it because it's at the discretion of the referee. That just seems like a can of worms to me. And that's why I just think it's dangerous for it to be brought in so quickly. I feel sorry. They're not popular, but I feel sorry for the refs. Now, the refs, I've been talking to a couple of the leading ones that have been around for some time, and like some refs it'll suit. Some refs like to have control. They like to be the main dominant ref on the field. The GPS data actually says they run less. They do less miles running around per match with one referee. So, you know, I don't know if fitness is really the big problem that people might think it is. But there's a concern that, you know, in terms of play the ball speed, their decision making, they're going to be referring more decisions to the bunker. And in terms of player safety, which the NRL bang on about all the time, those things are sort of going to be left by the wayside. But Peter Volandis is keen to make his mark on the game. He and I had a very heated conversation yesterday. He said, you're only talking to a couple of coaches, you know, and they're the ones that are trying to run policy, which isn't correct. There's a whole lot of stakeholders across the game that have concerns about rushing it in so quickly. But it's going to be an interesting talking point early on, isn't it?
Webby, can you? I've been confused all week with this, and I'm sure a lot of people are. Can you confirm or deny that the reason they have gone to one ref is for the reason they said at the start of what they were looking to do, save money? Because it just seems that is all out the window now. It's actually got nothing to do with saving money. It's all about they've made a decision based on what the fans are crying out for.
The narrative's changed, for sure. When this sort of first got raised a couple of weeks ago, it was all about how it's going to save a huge amount of money. Now, you know, as we know, there's been a fair bit of misinformation coming out of the NRL and a fair bit of spin to suit certain storylines. And the line was it was going to save $2 to $3 million. Now, I actually know in the Project Apollo meeting last week, when this got brought up at the last minute, in the last 10 minutes of the famous Project Apollo meeting, they said it was going to be $500,000. So, and then there's a report in the Herald today saying it's more likely to be $300,000. So the genesis of it comes out of a fan survey of 18,000 people late last year. And the number two innovation that they were introduced to the game was the one referee. But that's as far as it went. If it was such a pressing issue then, as it is now, why wasn't it talked about then? Why wasn't it introduced then? Why didn't we pressure test it in trial matches and start this dialogue some time ago? Yeah, I just think it's madness to be doing it so quickly in an interrupted season already.
What about the flu jab? Players getting it, not getting it. We read this morning that Bryce Cartwright has been given approval not to have the flu vaccination because he's had a bad reaction to it in the past. Had you previously heard that, or was it more about him being pro-choice, whether he wanted to have the needle or not? And what's the sort of ramifications now for other players, say the Canberra players and the Penrith players that have said they're not going to take it?
Talking about stories changing, that one changed too, didn't it? I thought it was pro-choice. He can be both. He can be pro-choice and not want to take it for medical reasons, which he obviously has done and finally got an exemption to be able to train and play in Queensland, thanks to the chief medical officer in Queensland. As it stands, those Dylan Walker, Fanua Blake, Papali, Sapini, and Soliola, they can't travel to Queensland unless they get an exemption, which doesn't seem to be happening. I think I indicated on this show last week, boys, that the NRL were confident that they would. But if there's one thing that the state and the federal governments are getting a little bit sick of, it's the NRL declaring things, declaring that things are going to happen before they actually get an exemption. So as it stands, those blokes, if they want to go, they're going to have to get an exemption or they're going to have to get the flu shot.
Or not play at all, as in not play when they go to Queensland.
Or not play at all when they go to Queensland. I think there's certainly a growing feeling that if that's the case, then they have to suck it up. There's only so much that the NRL and the state and federal governments can do to get the game back on the field. And if those blokes don't want to get the flu shot, then don't take the flu shot and don't play.
Webby, we're going to speak to Chris Anstey after 7:30 this morning, and you wrote an article on Luke Longley's silence in regard to the Last Dance, the Chicago Bulls documentary on Netflix, and it was very widely read.
Well, it's funny. So I actually wrote the first story about this last Saturday in the Herald because Luke Longley was about to do an interview and talk about the documentary, then mysteriously pulled the interview at the last moment. So I write about that, and if you ever wanted an indication of how much the world is fascinated by this documentary, it is the most read sports story on the SMH website in history.
Wow.
Would you believe? Really? Over 600,000 page views. That's about 3 or 4. So when the whole Folau story was bubbling along last year, those stories were generating a huge amount of traffic. Well, this one story about Luke Longley not saying anything about a documentary has gained about 3 times as much traction. So he's actually a really smart guy, Luke. I've sat next to him at a Sydney Kings game when I was there for a story earlier in the year. And he was telling me things that were going to happen on the court, like 2 quarters ahead. He said he's explaining how Will Weaver, the Kings coach, was resting players and rotating players quickly so the Kings could win right at the death. And he said, watch this, they'll win this in the last minute. And that's what happened. They drained a three-pointer in the last minute.
All over it. Now, in Webby's column today, and we brought this up actually, I think it was might have been a week ago or earlier this week, Earl Thomas, the Baltimore Ravens safety, and your the quote, stuff like this happens. And just a reminder, Webby, what did he do? He well, he held a gun to
His wife held a gun to his head after bursting into an Airbnb where she was in the middle of a... Where he was in the middle of a, what do I say, sexual romp with his brother and other women.
Stuff like this happens.
It happened.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's happened before.
Just not to any of us, that's all.
Quote of the week, for sure. On that note, Webby, you have a great weekend.
And on that classy note, have a good weekend.
No, thanks for joining us, mate, as always. Andrew Webster there from the Sydney Morning Herald.